The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Big Barker Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged 149 times so far. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, the Sixers beat the Pistons. They don't have Embiid. The Pistons don't have Blake Griffin and Reggie Jackson. I don't think anybody got ticket refunds for it, which I think would sort of be a bummer, but Sixers win. Mike becomes a boomer. We will talk about that. I met Mike's dog Donovan for the first time, and I'll give a review of that later as well. And we'll go into the Lorenzo Brown mailbag, and we have an important update that Mike requested that we got an update in the Lorenzo Brown mailbag. I will let you sit on that for a moment. Before we get started, two-way night, Rights to Ricky Sanchez two-way night at the Blue Coats. That's right, December 27th at the 76ers Fieldhouse in Wilmington. For your $14 ticket, you get to go to the game with a bunch of weirdos. We will do a mini live Ricky on the court after the game with Blue Coats players, and you will get a Ricky and Blue Coats co-branded t-shirt. It is also Dollar Dog Night, and we get just a weird the fuck out of everyone who's there who doesn't know what the deal is. So that is December 27th. Go to rightsrickysanchez.com for more info. And if you sign up for Fly the Process 5 at Bark in the Park yesterday, I did the sell job on two significant others to go on Fly the Process to Indianapolis. New Year's Eve, if you go there, you get the Blue Coats tickets for free, and you also get to go on one of our road trips and spend New Year's Eve with TJ McConnell in a very real way as we see the Sixers play the Pacers, and then the all-inclusive New Year's Eve party. And when I say all-inclusive, it means the booze and TJ. So go to rightsrickysanchez.com for that. Without any further ado, Amos and the chef.
Bobby, sweetie, the man is here.
We will write y'all.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, now hosting the podcast as not the lone old person on the podcast. Please welcome newly minted 30-year-old Mike Levin.
Wow. That is tough to hear.
Yeah. How does it feel, buddy? You're a boomer now. Yeah.
It's the same. I got some friends together to watch the Sixers game at a dive bar. What's changed? Come on.
Oh, nothing, really. Yeah. I mentioned on Twitter, when we first started doing this podcast together, you were 23.
Yeah.
And now you're 30, which is...
When I first started writing at Liberty Ballers in 09, I would have been 19 or 20. I've been on here since a Jake Pavorsky type age.
Right. The difference between you and Jake is that you... grew up.
I did.
Whereas Jake seemed static. A couple of notes. When we started the podcast and you were 23, Zaire Smith was 14. That's a true thing. He had just turned 14 one month prior. And Brett Brown was not even the coach of the Sixers yet. So Brett Brown has lasted a long time, but you have spent a more significant part of your life on this podcast.
Yeah, reckoning with the fact of how big this podcast and the Sixers are a part of my life is intermittently like stunning.
It really is, isn't it? I thought the same thing. I told Val yesterday, I was like, Mike turned 30 today. And she was like, wait a minute, he's only 30? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. She was like, wow, I thought he was closer to my age. I'm like, he's not. I'm like, that means when he started the podcast, he was really young, and now he's not young at all anymore. And so we had a little conversation with you on that, in the car on the way to go see.
It's just
the
nice
lighthouse.
To hear I'm being talked about. That's really honestly honored.
That's all that matters. The Willie Green 5-star Apple Podcast 5-star review. We are at 2,536 on the way to 3,000. When we get to 3,000, I read all the reviews on a podcast. I've done that twice already for 1,000 and 2,000. This comes from Richard Licks. I'm writing this review, watching the opening game of the 2019-2020 season. And as I've just seen Al Horford make his first basket as a Sixer, I know that I've always loved and appreciated him. I give the podcast and Al Horford 5 stars. And as we pivot, talking about Al Horford, who had a tremendous fourth quarter last night, it did feel like 4 separate quarters in the game last night, you know? But for the second straight game, Sixers with a strong second half. Toby carried him in the third, brought him down. I think they were down 13 at one point. And then Horford with some huge buckets down the stretch. And the Sixers win a game that previously would have felt like a Sixers lose this game.
Yeah, I don't even know what those are anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching it, and it might have been the Bloody Marys I was drinking, but I was like, they're going to win. It's fine. And then Tobias sort of, like you said, started picking up the slack, ended with 29 against one of his 18 former teams.
Yeah.
And fucking Horford in the fourth, him and Ben playing a little pick and pop action. They're a really fun team to watch. And the bench is going to be an adventure all year.
Shooting is
going to be an adventure all year.
It sure is.
It really is. I don't know what it is about this team. And maybe it's just the way Brett coaches them, or maybe it's Embiid and Simmons's personalities, but like, or just the kind of style of play they play, because they really do have to try to get buckets in a way. But like, they're going to look dead. They're going to look like they're phoning it in, and maybe that's because they're in this for a long haul. They're not, you know, they have in game switches and then, you know, weekly switches to flip, but it's still early in the season. I can't really tell. But it seems like they're going to be the kind of team that just goes through stretches of looking somewhat incompetent.
Well, dead and incompetent, two separate things, obviously. I thought there was an enormous chance that to go on the road against a Detroit team not playing with Blake Griffin after playing the Celtics in the home opener, that there was a chance that they were going to, like, the energy that you saw in the first game was not going to come across in the second game. And it was sort of up and down. And the shooting part of it is going to be, boy, it's going to be an adventure this year.
Toby 4 of 6, that's too consistent, Spike. You don't want him making too many of those shots, because then he's going to have to miss them next game. That's how it works.
Yes. Well, that's the only way that you get to an average, is that if you...
Honestly, the only way.
Yeah, unless he's going to shoot 66% from three. Well, before we get to Toby, Embiid misses the game with a sprained ankle. I don't know. I didn't see anywhere where they indicated when that happened. I forget who said it to me at Bark in the Park yesterday. Maybe it was Kornblau, who had a table and was. I'll talk more about that later. But he mentioned, I think it was him, that said, "Well, you've said before, if he's going to miss 20 games, that means he has to miss 20 games." And like, I know it sounds stupid, but like, you know, a mild sprained ankle is a perfectly good reason to miss a game. Yeah.
It was a really nice birthday present of him to take a rest day and let Matisse start. That was fine. I was fine with that.
Yeah. I hope it's not anything bad, but I haven't seen any indication that it is. As a person who has broken his ankle twice and sprained it once, the sprain was much, much worse, but nobody has ever indicated that that's the case. So
it also is kind of, in terms of his somewhat one-sided rivalry with Horford, it is pretty, like, he's dominated him for so long, and then to just not
play. You mean
play.
Drummond.
Embiid dominating Drummond for so long, and then just being like, I'm not going to show up, and we're still going to win. Like, that's
yeah.
There's nuclear mind games being played here.
Yeah, it's the ultimate disrespect. That's I'm not even going to show up to beat you. It doesn't even mean that much to me. A couple of quick Pistons notes. The process lives everywhere as Tim Frazier starts at point guard and Christian Wood on the Sixers. And I know he wasn't a Sixer, but seeing Tony Snell brick a bunch of threes was nice. I feel like he heard us in his head. And while watching them, I just thought to myself, what a fucking disaster. Like, terrible situation they're in. I mean, I don't, like, what do you even do? Even when Blake Griffin, who is good, is playing. I mean, when we talked about the process in the beginning part, the idea was to not be in the purgatory of where the Pistons are. But, like, not only are they, I think there is a way to be, like, a 50-ish or a 49, 48-ish win team and still be sort of, like, fun and enjoyable and all those sorts of things. But, like, the Pistons are not just, even at full strength, that's just a, feels like a waste of time overall in a lot of different ways.
Kind of. I do think that Drummond has gotten better year to year. He's like, he's clearly trying to open up parts of his game. And prior to shooting 3 of 10 last night, he was shooting well from the line. I could see a world where Blake and Drummond are like sort of bully their way into a 4 or 5 seed and have a chance if they had, and if some of those like wing guys pop, like I think Luke Kennard's a good player.
He is.
If like
Luke Kennard's good.
If Bruce Brown keeps improving, if Khyri Thomas or Svi Mykhailiuk like pop, like then it's like, okay, now we have some guys. But it feels like they've just missed on so many wing guys over the years that they've never been able to complement it. And they just like sort of latch themselves into Reggie Jackson. And it's like, well, that's just such a drag on your team. So, but I think I could see a world where they almost get to interesting, but I don't think that they're a very smart franchise. But yeah, good for Christian Wood and Tim Frazier on the shirt.
On the shirt and in the NBA still. So let's start with Tobias Harris, who the thing that I was thinking, and obviously had a great third quarter that got the Sixers back into it. The thing with Harris, and I mentioned on Wednesday night's pod, and I looked at some numbers, and because I didn't realize what a leap it would be, because what I wanted him to do, and he did it a couple of times today, or yesterday rather. I'm sorry, I watched the game this morning, but did it a couple of times against the Pistons, and got fouled on one of them, was fine, and passed up a openish three to drive and take a shot in the lane that I wish he would have just taken the three. And I looked at how many threes he took last year, and it was like 390 something, which is under 5 a game. And he shot 6 yesterday. And I really think that they are going to need him to shoot like 8 a game. And that is a huge jump. But given everything that we're seeing with everybody else, like, first of all, Toby, like, you're signed now. So if your percentage goes down a little bit, it's not going to affect your contract. You're good. You're making $36 million anyway. Somebody on this team needs to be a high-ish volume three-point shooter, and I just don't think 5 is going to get us there, which is what he's averaging so far, I think, or just over. I think he shot 5 in the first and 6 in the second. I think he needs to shoot 7, 8, 9 a game.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. It is you looking at the totality of a season and going like, okay, that's what he averaged last year, is especially in Philly, that was probably about the same. And it does need to be in that level just because of how even Horford quickening his release and. You know, Mike Scott doesn't have, like, that quick of a release. The way Toby shoots above his head, like, he can sort of take those shots with guys, someone in his face, and I would be very willing to see those things happen because there's still a couple moments where this team's going to struggle to get points, and I'd rather take a, you know, Tobias Harris somewhat contested three with, like, 12 seconds left on the shot clock than someone having to take a contested mid-range with like 2 seconds left on the shot clock. So if you have a good look at it, take the shot.
So he shot 4.7 with the Clippers and 5 with the Sixers last year. 43% with the Clippers, 32% with the Sixers. And also, not a total surprise. And like, look, some of this is fake because just because the Sixers start Horford and Embiid, you know, like a lot of the time that Toby's on the floor, he is playing power forward. But I don't think it's totally an accident that he has a big game with, first of all, like one of their primary scorers is gone in Embiid. But I don't think it's totally an accident that he gets some better looks when he is at the four rather than the three. That's just a better offensively and defensively, a much better spot for him to be playing.
It's certainly something to keep in mind as we watch of like, okay, when Embiid or Horford sits, who is looking good? And Tobias and Mike Scott both traditionally like should be four guys having big games of proficiency from deep without Embiid there is interesting to look at. So we should keep an eye on that. Good job, Spencer.
The other big game, and then we'll get to everybody else, was Horford in the fourth quarter was fucking monster. It's just hilarious to me to see Horford getting big buckets and having like 15 points in a quarter.
Yeah, I mean, attacking a closeout and like dunking with nobody stepping up to it. It's just like, it's so nice to have him not on the team we're playing. Just all the time.
Best.
It's very nice. And I mean, a very un-Al Horford-y 18 shots, pacing the team in shots. 23, 9, and 5, and of course, no turnovers. Hasn't made a mistake yet. Taking 7 threes is nice. He's going to have to keep doing that. It's great. He's great. Everybody seems to like him. He sort of crashed the Mike Scott, Tobias Harris post-game thing. There's camaraderie. I love it.
Tobias Harris reads books, according to Mike Scott.
Okay, was that what that's from? Because I didn't see that. All I saw was a gif of it. I was going to ask you what the
So in the post game interview with Serena Winters, I almost just said the rights to Ricky Sanchez's own Serena Winters, and she's in no way part of the Ricky.
Wow.
I don't know why I almost said that. Serena, you're more than welcome to come on the Ricky. More than welcome. She was talking to Mike Scott about Tobias's game before she talked to Tobias and Mike Scott, who also had a big game. But she was talking to Mike Scott about Tobias, and he was talking about all the things that were good about Tobias. And like at the end, and like he wasn't even kidding. Like it was really just a stream of consciousness. He goes, "Yeah," and he reads books. I thought it was great.
Love it.
It was great. Yeah.
Mike Scott is a walking quote.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and of course she asked him about his ankle and he said, "Yeah, it's okay. But you know me, I'm no," and he didn't even say it, but he just gave her the nod. So now he's even starting to censor himself when he knows he's on TV.
I love
it. He's really in the zone right now.
Day by day.
Yeah. We take a break from the pod to talk about our oldest and dearest sponsor. I wonder if he's our oldest sponsor in age and also in time spent with the podcast.
I'm not willing to weigh in on that.
Yeah. I don't really have any comment. That is LL Pavorsky Jewelers, also a sponsor of our Bark in the Park run team from yesterday. LL celebrated, it looked like he sold 2 rings yesterday to Writes to Ricky Sanchez listeners. We are up to 149 rings sold to Writes to Ricky Sanchez listeners. The most recent one, he says, this is what LL claims, they drove 2 hours one way just to get the ring from LL. No word on whether they drove back afterwards or whether now LL has to house them in the store.
That's as far as they're willing to go.
Yeah. They're like, our total commute commitment is going to be 2 hours. Do with it what you will. So they've built a small apartment in the back room of LL Pavorsky Jewelers. The only thing is they have to go down the street to the bagel store to go to the bathroom. In any case, LL has been with us the whole time. Even, I think, pre-pod, or maybe it wasn't pre-pod, when he showed up at this Sixers party I did at this small South Philly Chiefs bar with Jake, when at the time Jake was about 12 years old. And he's also hooking up, I don't want to say what it is, but I will say that a ring for a Ricky listener who is coming from very far away, just to get the ring from LL, and then there will be an exciting proposal of it. So the reason people continue to go to LL is that they don't know any other jewelers, and when we tell them to go to LL, they just listen.
That's right.
But the reason they continue to go is because they get great rings at a great price, and I think most importantly is the service they get from LL is an all-timer. It is low pressure, high information is what I like. That's what I'm trademarking it as. It's very catchy. Low pressure, high information. You walk in there, it's just LL, maybe one or two other people, no salespeople breathing down your neck and taking the time with you to get the ring that will make you truly, truly happy. If you want to get a ring, an engagement ring from LL, you can just stop by. But if you call him or contact him, I know not everybody likes calling people nowadays, but if you contact him beforehand and give him some sort of idea of what you want, he'll have a better setup waiting for you when you arrive. So give him a call at 215-627-2252, or you can tweet at him at LL Pavorsky. You can email him if you want, if you just go to llpavorsky.com. Or like I said, if you want to just stop by and, you know, throw caution to the wind, you can do that at 707 Walnut. Coded by Kids and Providence Animal Center are our charities for the Ricky, and LL makes donations to both every month in honor of the Ricky. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Part jewelry store, part Airbnb.
Back to the Ricky. Ben played well. Ben looked like Ben. I don't think he played as well as he did in the Boston game, but he was good. He was a disruptor in a lot of ways defensively. He shot one fadeaway jumper. Of course, we haven't seen a three. Markel Fultz has made two so far, by the way.
I saw that and just had real... Him going 2 of 6 from three, and I haven't watched them yet, and maybe I should.
No, they look bad.
They do?
They look bad.
Maybe I should watch them on the podcast.
He was 0 for 3 in the first one, and in the first game. He looks the same. He looks exactly the same as he did when he was here, but maybe he's just sort of accepted it, and he's going to shoot them anyway. He's made more threes than Josh Richardson, I think. Ben is shooting.
Hang on, wait, I'm reeling from that last comment. Just give me a moment of silence. Well, I think about that.
I'm sorry.
Josh
Richardson really has that job. I mean, it's funny. I was going through my head trying to equate different Sixers players to 90s Knicks players, and he definitely has that John Starks energy, but John Starks would make like 6 threes in a row at some point, and it doesn't seem like Josh will. Ben shooting 41% from the line so far, and if there is one thing, let's jump shot aside and free throw shooting aside, that I wish would change a little bit, is he does like when it's crowded around the rim, rather than forcing his way through it, there's like a, like, you know, off the fingertips kind of layup that tries to go high off the glass, or does it far away. Like, I wish he would just commit to getting fouled. And he's so much bigger and stronger and faster than everybody. You know, this team has done a good job of in the two games so far of getting the other team to foul him. And, you know, he gets the difference between him getting 4 or 6 free throws and 9 or 10 is massive. You know, that's 3 extra fouls on the other team. So that's the Simmons thing. I if I can criticize anything, it's that so far.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I would love for him to just decide to get a shit ton of free throws. It's maybe that will coincide with him just steadily improving as a free throw shooter. You saw him get to the line more last year as his free throw percentage went up a little bit. So far, he has not been as successful from the line. But I don't disagree. I want everybody going to the line. I want to demoralize other teams with how much we're walking to the foul line.
I got to tell you, I don't know how – I look at Josh Richardson's three-point shooting from previous years, and I don't know how that happened because it's fine if the form isn't right, if it goes in, and it looked like previously it was, but that he's got a fucking like he, that's a heavy ball, man, he shoots. And he had, I thought, an overall pretty good game yesterday and a couple of cool finishes around the rim. But that shot doesn't look legit at all. And just sort of the overall three-point shooting thing as we go back to the Tobias thing.
Do you think that Sean Marion shot a heavy ball?
I don't remember, but it was an ugly shot.
Yeah. And kind of Josh shoots a little, not quite as from the other side, but kind of like leaning wise. Some of Alonzo also. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a weird shot. I don't feel the same about the heaviness of the ball as I do about Jonah.
Okay.
But I'll keep an eye on it
and feel, sort of
physics it up. More math than anything else.
I'm just thinking out loud before anyone has a heart attack that I say this, because a couple of people had mentioned, and AU did in his previous article, that the trade ship they would have at the break would be, or to get a shooter would be Zaire in some fashion. But I do, as I think about it out loud, wonder if I wouldn't think about Richardson if it meant getting somebody who maybe was not, maybe even nearly as good a defender, if it was a killer as far as shooting and scoring, would you rather have just, and not that this trade is on the table or it would be, but would you rather have Lou Williams or Josh Richardson?
Josh.
Really?
Yeah. I'd rather have, I think this team has an identity, and I think them doing this guy doesn't defend, but he can really score in the half court in the regular season. I worry that that is, not that I'm saying that's what Lou is, although it kind of is. He's proven a little more in the playoffs. But I was thinking, even if Zach LaVine became made available.
Mm-hmm. He's making too much, but,
yeah,
but
for
let's
sure.
say.
But like yeah. that kind yeah. of player, I'm like, no. Give me the guy that is going to be a dog. I think the shooting will go to around where the previous seasons have been. I believe in him improving as at least like a once in a while playoff, 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes that Ben has to take a break, secondary ball handler. Although we can talk about Shake and Neto, and we will, Spike. But yeah, no, I want Josh. I love Josh. I think he's going to be here for the 2 years that he's here, unless things go south. He traded him next year before his contract's up, maybe.
And by the way, just looking at people, all I was doing was looking at people who actually have value.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
I don't know what value Zaire Smith has, but Josh Richardson would have a ton of value. That's part of the reason they were able to get Butler for Covington is the cost and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So he does have a lot of value.
He does, and I just think he is most valuable here. As much as it'd be nice to have a guy who was a, JJ or Shamit level shooter with also his defensive skill set, or someone that could really penetrate with also defensive, I think they're prioritizing defense. And they, in the playoffs, when it really matters, I'm not going to want the ball in a, Zach LaVine type hands. There's too many mistakes. There's not that many guys out there that can efficiently do offense guard position.
Would you rather have Buddy Hield or Josh Richardson?
Ooh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Right. Because he's a fucking... Boy, is Buddy Hield way better than I thought he was going to be.
I'd probably say Buddy Hield at this point. As much as I would... as I like Josh and think Josh is a better ball handler and distributor and stuff, or close at least. I don't know, but I have to watch Buddy on defense more. But that'd be a close situation for me. I do really like Josh and think his fit on the team will be better than it has been the first couple games.
Shake Milton apparently was reading Twitter and was like, well, everyone is wondering why Furkan Korkmaz is the first fucking guy off the bench and playing 20 minutes a game and hit a couple of shots yesterday to try to encourage Brett to and actually Raul Neto had a couple of nice little runs.
Yes,
in
he did
there as well.
I'm a Raul guy. I am pro Raul.
Yeah, as am I. It is sort of weird that Brett has him and Burke apparently so far buried, because Howell didn't even get on the bench until Simmons got into foul trouble yesterday and Korkmaz gets first guard. I wonder how long the Korkmaz thing is going to last, like how much the theoretical idea of him shooting three-pointers is going to last in Brett's mind until it becomes evident that they're not going in yet.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a huge Milton guy at all, but Korkmaz is not it.
Well, let's hang on a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's treasure this moment when Shake Milton plays in a legitimate game, legitimate rotation minutes, and does quite well. Hits shots, attacks off the dribble, couple passes here and there. Like, he hit a quick release corner three with Derrick Rose in his face. And Derrick Rose got very pissed off afterwards when he turned around and saw it went in. He is legitimate NBA player. They got him at 54, whatever it was at that one of those draft picks, and he's on the previous somewhat hinky special. It's a nice thing. It is a nice thing that Shake is here and doing things. Who knows how good he's going to be, if he's ever going to be anything more than seventh or eighth guy. But even that, that's really nice, and I'm proud of him, and I want him to be permanently in the rotation. That's what I think.
Well, I mean, luckily, the only guy he has in front of him is Josh Richardson as a backup, and he starts. You know, like, Josh, it's funny, everybody going, Josh Richardson should get the backup point guard minutes. It's like, well, you know he starts too, right? Like,
yeah. So this is where I'm at. I don't want him. He's, like, obviously, dog, willing to do whatever he wants. He'll absolutely just, like, handle whatever responsibilities what Brett gives him. But I don't want anyone playing over 35 minutes in November, December. Like, we don't need it. What are we doing?
No.
Let's let everybody go down. So obviously with that Embiid, they, you know, Brett gave the other guys more time. But I this is gonna be a long ass season. I don't want Horford, Simmons, Tobias, and Josh to all have over 34 minutes. So let's get Shake some of those minutes. Let's get Neto some of those minutes. Rotate guys in and out, keep them fresh. Come on.
Brett Brown did sort of indicate to Jonah Bolden what he thought of him by by activating Norvell Pell for this game with him beat out. Will Jonah Bolden ever play for the Sixers again? That's the real question.
I don't know.
In any meaningful capacity, I think his run might be over.
And that's why it was so. And I know the Sixers front office is going to roll their eyes as they say this, but that's why it was so frustrating when they gave away all those picks in the 30s. Because you have a roster spot, they're like, well, that's Jonah's roster spot. And it's like, well, you don't like him, you don't play him, and he's not very good. And he makes a lot of mistakes. And maybe over the course of his contract, he can get there. He's still got a couple years left on that rookie deal. But doesn't look good. And if you think he's questionably good, or you're not 100% sold, then draft somebody at 33 or 34 and give him a real chance to make the roster. Or move up and get – There could have been so many guys. You could have packaged them up, traded up, moved – and if one of those did not pan out, whether it's – I want it to be Grant Williams. That's who I'm saying, is Grant Williams. Should be a Sixer. And he should be Jonah Bolden's roster spot, and we should be celebrating all the time. But instead they're like, that's Jonah's roster spot, we can't do anything about it, sorry. And that's the same thing they did when they kept Stauskas and Okafor and then traded him for Trevor Booker, who they later cut. Like, those kinds of things. It's like, well, this guy's a roster spot. Make it competitive. Draft somebody and make them force your hand to do something, and then trade somebody else for a future second after the fact. That's all I'm saying, guys. Spike, that's all I'm saying.
I'm with you. I've been saying he's bad since the first time I saw him. So I'm 100% with you. Take another shot.
But this is specific, because this is a trend for this front office in general, and I want them to stop doing it. I want them to draft guys and be like, hey, we took a shot. We saw him at Summer League. We saw him at training camp. We got to know him a little bit. It didn't work out. But at least we tried. and we, you know, whatever, didn't make the team. Let's make it a competition. Let's make people fight for those last spots.
And finally, from last night, I don't know if you have anything else. Another disruptive day for Thybul defensively, and he starts. He is shooting 12% for the season so far.
That's my guy. 20%. I don't need it. I don't need shots to go in. That is overrated.
Ike said, Ike Reese said to me, Ike, who always hated Covington before the season started, he goes, you know, Thybul's already better than Covington. And I was like, will you shut the fuck up? Like, I got furious. And there were a couple, you know, like, Thybul does look more comfortable dribbling the ball.
Yeah.
But there are, like, he more comfortably sort of fucks up than Covington did.
Yeah.
Covington looked more out of control, but Thybul still... look, if here's the only, he's obviously going to play 20 minutes a game the whole year, maybe more. But if he's not going to make any shots, it really does sort of like just speak once again to the fact that they need Tobias to shoot more. And at some point, they're going to have to add another shooter.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think he'll hit more shots than 1 of 8 regularly. But yeah, I would love to see. They haven't really gotten many just open transition opportunities, and I wonder that why that is. There's been a couple like Ben coast to coast, but there hasn't been much like 2-on-1, 3-on-1 breaks, like steals in the open court type thing.
They didn't get their first fast break points till 3 minutes left in the first half yesterday. Yeah,
I think he's a. So I watched. I did really watch a lot of Matisse at Washington, and there was a lot of. This guy seems like he's the best player on the court, but he also kind of can't dribble, and they're letting like David Crisp and Jalen Noel do a lot more with the ball than Matisse is. What's the deal there? And so when he did try to do things, sometimes he overdid it, and you could see him fucking up. But just seeing him at Summer League and then training camp and preseason and now, like, he has gotten better with the handle. It's something he's focusing on, but... sometimes in that intermediary from when you're like, oh, this thing I don't do, and then this thing that I'm getting better at, but still kind of working out the kinks before you're fully operational, there's a lot of user error. And so Matisse is like, I can do this thing, but like not quite there yet. And so I think he will turn the ball over a lot, but I think he's going to get there in subsequent seasons and be a real threat. So I'm happy to have him play 20 minutes of sometimes elite, sometimes, wow, that's a lot of fucking up basketball, especially in the regular season.
Yeah, he's got such a calm look to him that you don't feel like he's fucking up because he doesn't look like panicked at all. But he does. He definitely does fuck up sometimes. But Sixers are 2-0 and on pace to go an NBA record 82-0.
Wow.
So I will take it. Yeah.
It's
next
fun to
it's
fun
what,
to
Tuesday?
Just win and be and it's nice.
Or Wednesday.
Next game is Monday, isn't it?
No, is it?
Yeah, they play tomorrow. Hawks.
Oh, Jesus.
All day.
I'm sorry, that's just a lot of games.
All season long, let's go.
And,
I'm ready.
And then they play Wednesday. Then they play Timberwolves on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Covington and Philly.
Yeah.
Is that his first
again.
Game? Is
well,
that his
he
first
didn't
game
play
back?
Last time.
Yeah.
So he was back. They gave him the video tribute last year, but he didn't play.
All right.
He was there.
You better get roundly applaused.
I agree.
I need a lot of it. This team is nice. It's a nice team. Got into some arguments with some Clippers fans, friends last night. And, you know, they look good, but then they also lose to the Suns. So there is... it's going to be a long season. I don't think anybody's walking to any championship, or as much as the take complex want to crown the Clippers already. But I'm feeling.
I don't think anybody was crowning the Clippers. Actually, I think
really?
the immediate.
I thought it was like this is the new dynasty. They're unbeatable. I thought it was like that pretty quick.
One Amos Lee did refer to them as having dynasty vibes to me 2 days ago. But I think after the initial signing, I think my perception is that the storyline for the NBA this year has been that anybody can win. Like that's the,
yeah.
Or that, you know, 5 or 6 teams can win.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I agree with that. Dario looking good in Phoenix. Oh, the one thing I do want to say is Giannis has now fouled out of both games that the Bucks have played in. And they lost one to the Miami Heat yesterday.
Yeah.
So, just something to keep in mind. And if you think who Giannis is going to cover on the Sixers, that's going to be an easy matchup for him where he won't have to foul, use his fouls. But I think that'll be a focus over the course of the season.
Take a break from the Ricky to talk about our sponsor. We have a huge wedding brand here at the Ricky and a huge dog brand. And the dog brand covered so far by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. There were 6 Big Barker employees on the Wright Stricky Sanchez run team at Bark in the Park yesterday. Yeah. And I met a lot of process pups, obviously, because everybody brings their dog. For the first time, I met Sawyer, who is the dog of. I was trying to provide some sort of ownership to the person. But Kristen brought her dog, Sawyer. Big, huge dog. The guy's like, I don't know, 100 pounds. He just had surgery on his back leg. And having the Big Barker is just a huge plus as he heals up from the surgery. Met another 14-year-old dog there that sleeps on a Big Barker. Look, Big Barkers are great because they're nice looking. They are comfortable, but they provide support that no other dog bed does. And that is because they were made to support dogs as they get older. And their joints, they get achy, just like our joints do, just like Mike's joints do. At the old age of 30, Mike's joints are, I mean, how much worse do your joints feel today rather than yesterday?
Legitimately worse.
Yeah.
not a way I'm prepared to joke about.
So go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, bigbarker.com/Ricky. You can get the Big Barker dog bed and you'll get two iron-on process pup patches. So your dog can be like Finley, who is a Labrador St. Bernard mix from Atlanta, Georgia, who has developing arthritis and lays on the bed after every walk. Or Brody, an 8-month-old Cavapoo who lives in Southampton. And you send us your picture of your dog on the bed with the process pup patch, and we put them on the website. 10-year warranty. I was forgetting. 10-year warranty on the Big Barker dog bed, which is important because the Big Barker dog bed is not cheap, but it's worth every penny, and it's going to last you a long time. The foam does not flatten, or they replace it for free. And a 1-year at-home trial. Try it for a full year. If you're not happy with it, if your dog has communicated to you that he's not happy with it, they will pay for the shipping and give you a full refund. Handmade in the USA and right here in the area, right here in the Delaware Valley. Big Barker dog beds.
Woof. Woof. That was the sound of me laying down onto a Big Barker dog bed.
Yeah. Oh, I want to be clear, by the way. The 10-year warranty does not apply if your dog, like, rips the bed to shreds because he chews up everything.
Wow.
You got to get a warranty on your dog. I had a couple of those, and most people understand it, but I just want to be clear that they are not responsible for that. Back to the Ricky. I wanted to quickly thank everyone for yesterday's Providence Animal Center Bark in the Park. Actually, a really nice day this year, so they had a huge success. I haven't seen their final numbers on how much money they raised. Their goal was $75,000, which they passed. But our team had, of the 600-some total participants, we had 125 of them. And we raised $15,700.
Oh, man.
Which is fucking amazing, right?
That's
great. The goal was 100 people, and we got 125, and we raised $15,700. It was great to see your dad show up with Donovan yesterday. I didn't even know he was on the team, but he showed up. It was great.
Donovan doesn't love other dogs.
No, Donovan a little skittish.
So
Rebel only lasted 10 minutes because he doesn't like other dogs either. Rebel was so wired at one point that we had an 8-foot normal like folding table at the tent where people were checking in with us, and he did a standing jump from the ground onto the table where the t-shirts were.
Wow.
Did not run, just leapt. So Rebel's nervousness exemplifies in like a wiry anxiety, whereas Donovan's is more like, please don't come anywhere near me.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the vibe I was getting from Donovan.
That's totally right. Yeah, tail between his legs, that kind of thing. Not a good crowd guy. My parents are not great, big crowd people. They only come out when it's these events.
Well, it was great to see. Our sponsors for the run team were Colony Meadery, LL Pavorsky, and Kornblau, who was there. Kornblau did an extra donation to the Province Animal Center so he could be part of like their sponsor like area. And Kornblau was there with a jar full of, quote, candy Kornblau.
That's not bad.
And yeah, and you had to guess
how much
candy...
It's a little sexually perverted, but it's not bad.
You had to guess how much candy Kornblau was in the jar to win second row Sixers tickets. But as he told me, when people come up, I stopped saying candy Kornblau because I didn't want to have to explain it to them. So that was great. And I want to give an extra special thank you to our... There were two particularly very big donors to our team. A guy named Vince Pellegrini, who donates to our stuff all the time, donated, I think, over $2,000. And Charlie Dunn, who is a big listener as well and a great guy, and both very normal people. Yesterday morning, I saw a donation to the team of $2,000, and that was from Charlie. And I asked why, and he said, "I just like goals." So he just wanted us to get to our goal. So thanks to everyone. Yeah, it was really, and it was, I got to tell you, man, it is the, have you run, are you a runner ever or no?
Yeah, I've run some half marathons and 10Ks. Definitely.
Okay. So I only recently started running 5Ks. I was more of a distance guy, but I can't anymore because of my hip. So I decided to run 5Ks, which I like. This 5K is, it's beautiful out and the scenery's nice. But it is on wet grass and leaves, and it is 100% uphill. I don't know how it's possible, but it is, and it is the toughest, most excruciating 5K I've ever run. I run 4 miles every day, 7 days a week. I was dying at the end of this.
Wow.
But great to see all of our team members there, either walking with dogs or walking or running. I don't know. It's really cool. 125 people on a Saturday morning to go support this shelter. It's really great.
And
so,
wear a shirt of our dogs.
Yes, wear a shirt of our dogs. And thanks to Abby as well, who designed the shirt. So if we have any shirts left over, I think we'll just send them over to Kinetic and people can go get them down there and give a donation. But I think once we give them to the sponsors that we owe them, I don't know how many we'll have. So keep an eye open for that. So thanks again. It was really cool. A couple of odds and ends, and we'll make the odds and ends brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding. That's right. Kinetic Skateboarding, your place to get, cool sneakers and gear and, of course, skateboards. And now that we're heading into the winter, snowboarding. Mike, they have these shoes. Now, do you have your phone on you?
No.
I was going to say go to the Kinetic Instagram. So they're DC sneakers. Now, some of the sneakers they have are too skateboardy for me to wear. Like, I can wear Vans, but, like, the big sort of, like, puffier-looking ones, I can't. But they are DC, and it's a limited release, DC sneakers. But they are – tell me what this makes you think of. They are orange and purple and have 34 on them. Like, isn't that Barkley Suns? Like, that's what they look like.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if they are an ode to Barkley Suns, but they're pretty dope. Anyway, they get sneakers at Kinetic that nobody else gets, like super limited run sneakers. KineticSkateboarding.com, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. Mike, I want to read you this a small segment from an article about the Sixers home opener from an Inquirer writer, Frank Fitzpatrick. And it was really about the fervor around the team this year and, you know, why it's going on. Two small paragraphs. For whatever reasons, Fitzpatrick starts, for whatever reasons, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and their teammates have connected with the city in a way that 76ers clubs featuring superstars such as Chamberlain, Julius Erving, Charles Barkley, and Allen Iverson never consistently managed. And that's especially true with millennials. Quote, the fans here got it from the beginning, and I do believe the millennials were the catalyst for that. Sixers president Chris Hecht said. It's not done. Quote, our transparency with the public allowed for the millennials to jump on this team. Now this cult following has built into something that's really universal. End quote.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts.
How long has Chris Hecht been with the team?
With the team, I don't know. President, 2 years, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I read this article yesterday, and it was like, this is nice, and also like, millennials, just saying millennials vaguely is kind of a Sixers fan gathered type thing in a different way that I didn't expect.
It's like worse. Yes.
And you are not a millennial.
I'm Gen X. I am a solid 4 years from being a millennial, maybe even five. I'm not a millennial. Yeah. Millennial is a little bit older than people think.
Yeah, every time. It's like 20, isn't it like 24 to like 38 or something right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not. A lot of times, people are talking about Gen Z when they say millennials. Yeah. Like millennials are not teenagers. They're not. They are. Yeah, they're into their late 30s. I don't know. It just seems like this cult following because of the transparency.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you handle this one because I already ranted about the Jonah Bolden roster spot. So you go here.
Well, I mean, like, look, we're always gonna. It's never going to be enough. Let me just express to everybody. There will never be an amount of credit and name saying that will ever be enough for us.
See, I disagree. I think one ring of the bell would do it for me. And I would.
Okay.
I'd let it all go.
I was getting there. You know, the only transparency I will attest to is the transparency that happened in the first year or two when they were doing Together We Build. I will give credit at that point that they were transparent at that point for what they were going to do.
Yeah.
But since they ran that GM out of town and started to say that this is the moment before it was the moment, they have not been transparent. And I do not believe that the transparency has allowed the, quote, millennials, who, by the way, have enough money. I think they're thinking of 19-year-olds, the millennials that are spending $700 to go on road trips with us and, you know, like fucking grownups is what they're talking about. Like they say millennials to, and this is me defending millennials. Here it is. They say millennials to talk about like, oh, the kids that go and hang out at the fucking mall or whatever. Millennials are grownups with fucking kids and mortgages, and they are not like just, you know, like, hey, we said this cool catchphrase on Twitter and it caught on. That is not what happened. What happened, Frank Fitzpatrick, is you should call Mike Jensen, who wrote an article like 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, giving us credit for it. I'm just saying that there are a lot of teams with young stars. There are a lot of teams with lots of fans and young fans. But there is only one team, specifically one team, that has this specific weird cult following that was super strong during the losing, and that was this team. And I hate to tell you, but it had nothing to do with you. That's all. It had to do with the people who are the fans, and it had to do with us in a lot of ways, and you really should just fucking... All you need to do is you just need to the like sort of the way TJ did it in his article on the Players Tribune, blah 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 blah, and the Ricky Sanchez guys. Like that's all you need to do. You just need to throw it in at the end. And though it will never be enough for me, especially because you guys ignored us for 3 years, have been very good for the last 2 years, but ignored us for 3 years, is we need to ring the bell. You know, like. We deserve it more than Carson Wentz.
so bald of both of us now, just doing it every time.
We need to ring the bell. It's the only thing. We talk about the parade, but A, we don't. You know, we hope the parade will happen. We don't actually know, and B, we know that you're not going to let us in the parade. So just. Just against some fucking Tuesday against Utah or something, and we'll pay for Mike to get over here. And
wait, like, hang on a second. What is more likely, them asking us to ring the bell or participate in the parade in some way? Because in the world of a parade, it's the era of good feelings. We've won a championship. Everybody's feeling good and not bitter about anything.
There's no chance. Look, I've been I've been through a parade now as like a partner of the team, and like with the Eagles, with WIP, and I'm just telling you, like, and the Eagles are a great partner, but there's absolutely no chance we're going to be part of the parade.
Okay. there's just a couple floats, and then behind is just a little tiny car, like toy car that we could just be riding in. Would be nice. Just a couple, like, sort of a wave.
Like, they may have some of their, you know, sponsors that spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars involved, but they're not going to have us in the parade. They're just not. So
beautifully desperate. I enjoy this.
Yeah. So let's just make this happen and make this all go. And the second little odd and end, is that yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago.
No, it was yesterday. It was on my birthday.
Yesterday was the 3-year anniversary of Joel Embiid's first game. It was against the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was one of the more electric moments I've ever been a part of at the venue, both because of Embiid and because of Mike Weber, the Spike Lee of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, shooting eye daggers into Sixers owners from 8 to 10 feet away. It was so much so that I thought they were going to ask us to leave. So I can't believe it's been 3 years since he's played. I really can't believe it. You know, it seems like yesterday. That really does seem like not that long ago.
Yeah, that was during season one of Trial and Error. I was breaking protocol and watching the game from the writer's room. It was a really big deal that he played. I think about it all the time, and it's worth continuing to think about it. Because for a while, it was just him. Will he ever play? Is this who he's going to be? A lot of Greg Oden talk. We had just been through a Bynum year of will he play, weird updates. Embiid's was pretty much, he's out a year, and then a year later, he's out another year. But getting him to play and play regularly and play into multiple postseasons, and now they're co-favorites in the East because of Embiid, it's a really nice thing that this has worked out the way it has. Because there's a world where he just never got there. His foot never healed, or they rushed him back, or he didn't take his rehab as seriously, or whatever it is, and it didn't come together. And he's had...
You sort of wonder how the millennials would have handled that, the unnamed millennials.
This is his third, I don't want to say mostly healthy, but non-catastrophic season in a row. And people were like, maybe he never gets that. And when, you know, knock on wood, it keeps up. But he seems like he's just a regular player that goes through, you know, a lot of the bruising that he does for a guy who plays as intensely as he does. But it seems like he's going to have a nice, relatively long career of being
a Sixer.
Being a Sixer, and hopefully one of the best Sixers of all time.
Already one of the, well, I mean, career-wise not, but already as far as, like, as good as he is, already one of the best Sixers to have ever played.
And culturally getting into that, you know, into that highest echelon of, you know, Doc, Iverson, Barkley,
Dr. J, Will. And we will end it with just a couple of Lorenzo Brown mailbag items. The first one, and if you want to send us a mailbag question, writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. Same place you send us the process butt pictures. This comes from John. Now, this is, Mike, something you've been awaiting for a long time. You requested it on the pod, and here it is from John. Spike and Mike, I want to provide you with the update Mike requested on a previous pod. I am enjoying the Kinetic gear that I won, and I'm planning to make a trip to Kinetic this weekend. The skateboard deck did not last long in my possession. At the conclusion of the live pod, my wife and I met and chatted with another listener, and I offered it to him. I felt like it was better served in his possession. This was Twitter guy Ryan Jones, I come to find out. Mike would be proud to know that my wife asked him who his 2020 Democratic candidate was before allowing me to pass it along.
Wow, a test.
Yeah. I was telling the truth when I said that I've been listening since near the beginning. I'm pretty sure someone in the crowd yelled liar when I made that claim. I began listening back in late 2013. I was alerted to the pod's existence by Max Rappaport when I was asking him for basketball pod suggestions. There were only so many Tara Reid references I was able to stand by listening to the Zach Harper, Matt Moore, CBS Sports pod.
Wow.
And by the way, I like those guys a lot individually. That pod was, all they did was complain about people on Twitter the entire time. It was very funny. I appreciate all the work you guys do to make the community around the pod such a cool thing. There you go. So there's your update. He's going to go to Kinetic. He's enjoying his stuff. He did give away the skateboard deck. Your comment.
I love it. Great update. End of thought.
One or two more. This is from PJ. Hey, Spike and Mike. I find the NBA's obsession with Zion annoying. What is our response if he wins Rookie of the Year while only playing around 35 games this season? I vote for a small but petty retweet Armageddon.
Mm. He won't. I also
you don't think.
Yeah, I also think that he will play, you know, probably lower than like 55 games. And I wonder what that, I was thinking about it. Because I'm in like a pool where you do the predictions of who's going to win all these awards and who's going to lead the league and whatever. And so I didn't vote for Zion because I don't think he's going to play enough games to win Rookie of the Year. And I was wondering, Embiid played 31 and that wasn't enough. Would 42 have been enough? Would 48, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, what's the number?
And I would say the number is probably 50. Like if Zion plays 47 games of the kind of basketball he's playing in preseason and Ja Morant plays like 79 and seems to pop and do well or whatever, Kobe White, whatever it is, I think they'll give it to the guy who played more games. Although
what?
Zion is more of a cultural like yeah. sensation than Embiid was as a rookie. So, yeah.
Well, he's going to miss. He already had a one knee procedure. If there was only somewhere that somebody had mentioned that there's no way the guy's going to get through any season without some sort of knee issue because he's weighs too many fucking pounds. Like, look, David Griffin said that it had nothing to do with how much he weighs. I'm just telling you, you can't jump like that all the time and weigh that much and play on a fucking hardwood court running up and down without hurting yourself. Nobody who is in Zion's camp listens to this podcast, but I am just telling you as a word of advice, that guy needs to lose 25 pounds if you want him to have a long career. Like he just does. He can't be that. He's too big. He's too big, or he's got to stop playing like that. You know, it happened to Blake, but, you know, Blake had this middle part of his career where he wasn't as skilled as he is now. Mm-hmm. And even still, he's sort of a confusing player. Do you know he took more threes than Tobias did last year?
Yeah.
By a pretty healthy margin, yeah. If I remember correctly. But I don't know, man. There's no way that guy's going to stay healthy, built like he's built, playing like he plays. So
I hope he does. He's really, really good and very fun to watch. I want to see him as healthy as possible. So if he has to lose weight, then dude, it's just so oddly proportioned. And I don't know if that was like a, you know, part of it, I don't think was a choice of like him being like, I think it's just his body is just very unique. And so, but for sure, lose weight, get a little, and I would also say, which is Zion seems to be have that same kind of mentality Embiid does of like, well, if I'm playing, I'm playing.
Right.
And it's just like you got, you know, take 5-10% off and then save it when you have to. But that can't be an every time thing.
I agree with you. And that's another thing that Blake learned. And then finally, this comes from, I don't even know who this comes from. I'm sorry. I think it was Mike. Hey, guys, I'm sitting here watching Dario and Phoenix face off against Jeremy Grant and Denver, and Grant just yammed so hard. This brought me a thought. What process player do you wish could come back and play a significant, important role in winning a championship? Jakar, Dario, Alfred Payton, but seriously, which one could help us the most? I feel like we've had this question 100 times. His pick is Ish Smith, which is wrong.
Well, I think if you did like a tertiary, I think the obvious one is Covington. I think even Dario would be a good option on this team as a guy that can take high volumes of threes and step into them. And he also, Dario played some good defense against Denver the other night in a very close Phoenix loss to Denver. Phoenix 2-1, by the way, without Aiden because he's suspended. Weird times in Phoenix. Interesting team. Wow. I'll get back to it. But
my theory on Aiden. Aiden has always had a fucking loser face.
That's right. But I think surrounding Aiden and Booker with just like high character guys and just guys who work hard. Javon Carter's dope. Mikal Bridges is great. I mean, Cam Johnson was a weird pick. Anyway, I'm interested in Phoenix. I'm intrigued by Phoenix and happy for Dario that he seems to be having a good time. If you separated it to like fringy process guys, not guys that were here for long. So if it is like Ish or Jakar, I don't think you can say TJ, even though he's on that, you know, second string type level. I wonder, Dwayne Dedman would be interesting. Last year, Dwayne Dedman would have been great. Now we sort of don't need him. But from like a emotional full circle type thing, it'd be really nice if Tony Roten came back. I know that's a weird thing, but like a guy that could go get a bucket and sort of come pull it full circle. Like if they didn't have Trey Burke or something like that, they had an open roster spot where they were like, hey, we need one guy that can just go slash and get fouled and get to the rim, whatever it is. And it's like, all right, we'll give Tony Roten a 10-day. And if he just like sticks on a couple like hustle plays or whatever it is, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be satisfying in that level of player.
Ersan Ilyasova?
I think he's too good.
Jack and three. Okay. And hilariously enough, the name that popped up into my head after you said Roden was Bellinelli.
No. No. No.
All right. Well, boy, thank God that our next pod will have two games to talk about. I didn't even know there was a game tomorrow. That's fucking brutal. Boy,
game three,
so
and Spike is already underwater.
Oh, man. Buy your tickets for two-way night and make your reservation for...
It's going to be fun. Two-way night's going to be fun.
Yeah, and make your reservation for Fly the Process 5 to Indianapolis. I think we're going to... we're close to running out of direct flights. That's going to happen soon, and I think we might have to close it off at the end of November. Wow. So,
and
we might. I don't know if we will.
And
but we might.
Before people turn it off, watch Perfect Harmony on NBC.com or Hulu or NBC Thursdays at 8:30. This coming Thursday is the Halloween episode, and it's very funny. And then my episode is the week after, and I implore you to watch the whole show. It's all on Hulu. It's delightful. You'll enjoy it. There's basketball references, some stupid stuff. It's great.
Watch Perfect Harmony, that's all I have. Watch Perfect Harmony, and boy, let's hope the Eagles fucking win this game today. I could use that for me. For me, I hope the Eagles win today.
There you go.
All right, we'll talk to you later this week. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know Lick Face.
We were right, y'all. We were right. Even when it went wrong, we were right. We was right, y'all. We were right. So say the name. Say the name. We were right, y'all.